Museum Project. Are you there, Doug?
Yeah, good evening.
Here, let me see if I can get you up a little bit here in your volume. Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to let you kind of explain to the audience here what you do and why we've kind of picked up the idea of what's going on with this depleted uranium.
Well, sure. Thank you very much. During Desert Storm, the United States military in Great Britain and Canada and Australia consciously decided to use an extraordinarily effective munitions. And that munitions is called uranium munitions or depleted uranium. It's extraordinarily effective at destroying all armor, conventional structures and buildings, water treatment facilities, hospitals, cars and trucks, anything that it hit. And what had happened during Desert Storm or prior to Desert Storm, they had not put together any training. They had not put together an emergency medical response. They had not put together any environmental remediation procedures for after they had used this radioactive toxic munitions. And as a consequence, General Norman Schwarzkopf, by directive of the Pentagon, assigned me very specifically, this is right after the completion of the ground war, to clean up all of the depleted uranium mess, which is primarily friendly fire, all the casualties and destroyed U.S. equipment. From that work during Desert Storm, which is now 17 years ago, that's incredible, isn't it?
Yes.
17 years ago, we started, did a lot of reports with the United States General GAO, General Accounting Office, and then moved on to do a project called the U.S. Army Environmental Policy Institute study on depleted uranium munitions, the effectiveness on the battlefield and what the consequences were. From that work, I did a staff study and made specific recommendations that considering the United States and England, Canada, Australia, and all the other countries that get weapons and tanks and armor, A-10s, et cetera, from the U.S., in Canada would be using uranium munitions, and we need to put training in place, we need to put medical care in place, we need to put environmental remediation procedures in place. From that, they called me back to active duty. I have to understand, I came into the military in 1967. They called me back to active duty again in 1994 as the director of the U.S. Army Depleted Uranium Project to develop all the U.S. Army regulations that are now in place and mandated, signed by who was the former Chief of Staff of the Army, General Eric Shinseki, mandated thorough environmental remediation, immediate medical care, and complete training. And it's not being done. Uranium munitions are extraordinarily effective against all targets. We use them against armor and everything during Desert Storm, primarily the casualties during Desert Storm that the U.S. incurred, both those that died and those who were wounded and survived were friendly fire involving uranium munitions. Incredible effectiveness against the Iraqis and everybody else. Just killed thousands upon thousands upon thousands. What we call crispy critters. Left an environmental catastrophe. And then we did it in the Balkans. We were going to use it in Somalia. We got that stopped. We got a medical order out in October of 1993 mandating immediate medical care for all exposed individuals within 24 hours of exposure, and it's not being done today. They wait weeks and months and years. In fact, the Army's never even tested me today, to this day, 17 years later, even though I issued the original order mandating medical care, followed up by the theater medical commander, and followed up by numerous individuals in the Department of Defense and the Department of Veteran Affairs. So what we've seen today is we went into Operation Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom, and use uranium munitions extraordinarily, incredible numbers. During Desert Storm, we used approximately 375 tons. We're looking at thousands of tons now being used. It was an environmental catastrophe. They refused to clean up the environment as mandated by their own legal mandate, regulations, orders, and procedures. They refused to provide medical care to everybody affected.
Why do you think they're neglecting it?
Pardon me?
Why do you think that they're neglecting using these guidelines and taking...
Well, it's very simple. The United States is deliberately using dirty bombs around the world. It's that simple. And if they provided the medical testing, immediate medical testing, you would find the direct correlation between the exposures and all the serious adverse health effects that are affecting hundreds of thousands of people in the U.S. military today, and actually millions around the world, and especially in all these nations that we've thoroughly contaminated with radioactive waste. BU, or uranium munitions, are very complex. Most people hear the term depleted and they think, well, there's no radioactivity, and that's wrong. They think they're depleted and there's no hazard, and that's wrong. They're extraordinarily dangerous. I mean, uranium munitions actually consist of numerous radioactive isotopes, primarily uranium-238, which is a non-fissionable isotope under slow neutrons. And then you have uranium-234, uranium-235, you have uranium-236, you have plutonium, neptunium, and americium. So those are the primary isotopic composites of uranium munitions. And it's just a total nightmare. The thing is that back during Desert Storm, March of 1991, Tommy Franks, I think everybody knows who he is today, right?
Right.
He handed me a memo and said, no matter what you do, lie in your report to sustain the use of uranium munitions. In other words, act their proponency, because they're so effective in a combat. And if we didn't do that, they would become politically unacceptable because of the environmental and medical consequences. And therefore, we were ordered to lie in our reports. I couldn't do that. I can't do it to this day. At the same time, I got another memorandum from the Defense Nuclear Agency that warned about not only is it a health hazard, but a serious health hazard, and warned us about all the serious consequences of contamination left all around, not only in Iraq, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, but any other place it's been used. It's been used in testing and everything throughout the United States. I think most everybody is familiar with the catastrophe in Vieques, Puerto Rico. We also have a catastrophe.
Yeah, but I thought they're selling that land now for to build homes on it, are they not?
Yeah, correct, and I wouldn't go anywhere near it. Simple as that. I wouldn't go anywhere near it. We've got a catastrophe, same thing down at Eglin Air Force Base in Florida, and the contamination's got in into the bay down there. We've got contamination up near Albany, New York, from the National Lead Site, where contamination got released from the facility building the uranium rounds, National Lead Site, and it was confirmed 30-some-odd miles away at a U.S. Navy facility coming in. At sufficient quantities cause health hazards, and it's a medical catastrophe around Albany, New York, and the National Lead Site. We've been up there with work with the medical folks a lot. The most serious one that we do know of, and it's now a National Superfund site, is in Concord, Massachusetts, the community where our nation was founded on the 18th of April of 1775. That's StarMet, medical disaster from uranium munitions manufacture. And so it just goes on and on and on.
Okay, now, can you explain, now when you're saying that the contamination from it, now is that when it's spent, or is even when you're handling the ammunition before it's been deployed?
Well, we have two different parts. When we start to mine this stuff, okay, out in Four Corners area, this is, you know, Colorado, New Mexico, Arizona.
And
that's turned into a catastrophe for the Navajos, you know, from the mining of uranium. It's just an absolute catastrophe there. And then as we take into the manufacturing process at the U.S. Department of Energy sites in Paducah, Kentucky, Oak Ridge, Tennessee, and Portsmouth, Ohio, that turned into a medical catastrophe. And you got all of the byproducts and the waste products and everything else and all the releases into the environment. And then when we get to the actual manufacture of the uranium munitions, whether it was StarMet, Aerojet, down in Jonesboro, Tennessee, which is a disaster in of itself, too. And, you know, Albert Gore wouldn't do anything about that, but, you know, that's a whole other story. And so we see it all over. So we've got that whole thing, the whole life cycle from the time that it's first mined through the manufacturing process and once it's used. Once it's used, what happens is the uranium round breaks up in flight, and it breaks up on impact. So you have an extraordinarily fine uranium dust that can be resuspended and redistributed for eternity. So it'd be as if you were to take a, just think about this, take a whole bunch of lead paint dust, okay, ground up lead paint dust, okay, everybody knows how toxic that is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And just grind this up thousands and thousands of tons and just spread it all over the earth.
So it gets in the jet stream.
Well, it gets in the jet stream. You know, we've got total confirmation, scientific confirmation. Chris Busby and even the Royal Academy agreed with this. That that's the British Royal Academy, you know, the Royal Academy of Science, that's the top body in the world. That the contamination had gone from Iraq all the way up into northern England and throughout Europe. We know from our own work the contamination. We did the testing in the Nevada test site, Mercury, Nevada, that resuspension continues ad nauseum until it's all thoroughly cleaned up, which is virtually impossible. When I did all the testing in Nevada, we literally burned up the stuff. We blew up everything, and we did a lot of field work, and we did a lot of lab work. And it scared me. It scared us. What we learned from firsthand experience, you can't clean it up, okay, no matter what you do. Once you release it, it's there. Because I have to understand, we not only have uranium, radioactive materials that's both chemically toxic, like lead paint dust, but radiologically toxic. And then you have all the combined unexploded ordnance, the explosives, the byproducts, the explosives, that's all your nitrates and your sulfites and everything else, and all your heavy metals from explosives. But then you have all the environmental contamination from what you blew up. It's just a total nightmare.
So these places like Yucca Mountain and that sort of thing aren't.
Oh, geez. Yeah, well, my research area was Area 25, was so close to that to make your head spin. Yeah, I wouldn't go back in the area. Not without wearing a moon suit, spacesuit, level A protection. We found out that the best protection, level B protection, that the U.S. Department of Energy and the military provided was totally ineffective, and it just went right through. You cannot protect yourself.
And so the troops don't know about this?
Well, you know, we put all the training in place. There's common task training for the military. Everybody that's being deployed in the military is supposed to complete the common task training for depleted uranium that I wrote and it was approved by the NCO Academy and, you know, all the way through the military. But that's not being done. We know that for a fact. I know troops that are being deployed right now that don't know anything about it. We know troops that have been deployed don't know anything about it. Today was New Year's. I got an email today. Well, what had happened is a couple days ago, I got an email from the University of Illinois, a professor there, and they had gone through the University of Illinois trying to find me. And they said, contact this guy, and I got an email back from today. One of his relatives got deployed to Iraq, came down with respiratory problems, same as what we all hit us within 24 hours. The serious respiratory problems continue to evolve, and then pneumonia and everything else, and then heart failure. And he's only 23 years old, and he had to have a heart transplant 2 weeks ago. Hundreds of thousands of people, according to the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs, the disease and non-battle injury casualty reports, lists over 263,000 casualties alone. This doesn't include those that have applied, got out and applied for disability compensation and pension. These are the ones where we made an arrangement where they could get medical care for 2 years upon return from duty. And it's just when we look at the sheer numbers, we're from Desert Storm right now, according to the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs Gulf War Veterans Information System report from May of last year, 2007. At that time, we were at 280,000 of the survivors of a little over, 500-some thousand that are left surviving from Desert Storm that have now applied for permanent disability, and the death count.
So what is the percentage?
Over 70,000.
What is the percentage of vets that are that you're speaking of there?
Well, when we look at that, we're from Desert Storm. It's well over 50%.
And from Vietnam,
we're looking at the same percentages from Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom right now.
And you were saying what from that one? 70?
70,000 from Desert Storm are now dead. Yes.
Oh, gee.
You can go to the VA.gov website, and then once you get to the website, type in up in the upper right-hand corner of the search block the acronym GWVIS, and that'll pull up the whole report for May of 2007. Now, there's two reports that should have been issued since then. They haven't. They're supposed to come out quarterly.
Mm-hmm.
But then when we see the disease and non-battle injury casualty report from the VA from November at 263,000 from Iraqi Freedom alone, it was scary. So, we're seeing a medical catastrophe. And it's not just the U.S. military, but it's happened to all the coalition forces. But then up and beyond that, what's happened to all of these populations where we've gone in and destroyed their nation's infrastructure, thoroughly contaminated the environment with radioactive munitions. We've now used the thermobaric bombs all over, which are horrible. Popular Science, last issue, just had a great story on thermobaric bombs.
Now, what are those?
Thermobaric bombs is where they have, basically, you have a finite dust or powder and things, magnesium, uranium, and everything, and they get this and all filled it up, and then they ignite it, and it's a firebomb of incredible, incredible power and blast power and everything else. It's like a nuclear weapon without the nuclear part.
Huh.
It's staggering. And then we've got the Buck Rogers ray gun now.
What is that?
Well, the Buck Rogers ray gun is a high-energy microwave energy gun mounted on the back of Humvees or a fixed emplacement that literally cooks people alive. It's like putting your head in a microwave oven.
And I've heard of them, but I've not seen much in the effects.
They cook a person alive. What you do is you're causing vibration of the water molecule, 105 degree water molecule. So you cause vibration, and through thermal heating, again due to friction, you just literally cook the tissue, heat the tissue up.
I think I have seen some sites where the witnesses had seen this taking place.
Yeah, the U.S. Air Force used it extensively down at Moody Air Force Base in Georgia here last year, and they literally had second-degree burns on the U.S. military that were involved in it. You know, we'd yelled and screamed, but it doesn't do much good. They don't.
Now, is this people just using the weapon, or
pardon me?
Was this people just using the weapon, or
correct? They were testing and using it on U.S. military. You know, sort of like continuation of Project Shad.
Oh, my goodness.
You're familiar with Project Shad, right?
No, I'm not.
Okay. Project Shad has gone on since the 50s and continues to this day. It's dual-reduced chemical and biological and radiological materials on U.S. military and U.S. civilians.
So they
testing
just
purposes and find out what happens.
And so they're not necessarily being told about this when this is done?
Correct. Sometimes they are, sometimes they're not. The guys at Moody, some were and some weren't. They didn't understand the consequences thereof.
Kind of like when they just shoot somebody with a taser, they don't necessarily know what the ramifications are of that?
Correct.
Okay.
I mean, the tasers, anytime you put that kind of voltage into the body, you're going to disrupt the heart and all the functional electrical function, neurophysiology of the body, and it's not good. You can't do this. It's stupid. I mean, the number that have died from it now and serious wound injuries is staggering. So what we're seeing, and again with uranium munitions and, you know, having been the director, you have to understand this, it's incredible that throughout the whole military and all the branches of military that they did not have anybody on active duty that had the capability to function as the director of the U.S. Army Depleted Uranium Project. So they came to the University of Illinois and recalled me to active duty again in 1994. Now, if most people, if you're in the familiar with the military and everything, 20 years is a career and 20 years is retirement, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I came in at 67, and, you know, I finally retired now just recently. I couldn't pass a PT test or a physical, you know, for anything today. But we're still subject to recall.
Really?
It's over 40 years right now since I went on active duty for the first time.
But aren't you also sick with some of the effects of this exposure?
Oh, it's ripped me apart, ripped my team apart. Yes, absolutely.
That's just
part of, you know, we accepted the mission and the job to do the work, because if nobody else did it, you know, it would have been a catastrophe. But then when they didn't provide us the testing and the medical care that we requested immediately and continued to deny it, I'll give you an example. In November 1994, we conducted the first part of the test in the Nevada test site. That's the U.S. Department of Energy, Mercury, Nevada. Incredible testing.
Yeah, I've actually been there.
Pardon me?
I've actually been there.
Wow, I'm sorry. And so anyhow, we did the testing, and when I was coming out, the U.S. Department of Energy, Reynolds Aluminum, who was the contractor, actually collected the urine and all the stuff for me for a radio bioassay. Well, they got all the test results back immediately within a couple of months, but they never told me for 2.5 years that my excretion level was 5,000 times permissible level. Leaders in the Pentagon knew it. My own boss, the head health physicist for the U.S. Army, knew it, and they never told me. And the medical effects that were hitting me at that time was just staggering, and they continue to this day.
What do they? What does it do to you? What, you know, what are the different?
Well, the first thing that we saw on all of us, and what we see today, is the respiratory problems. Okay, and the VA diagnosis is reactive airway disease. It's a your respiratory tract acts like a pulmonary toilet.
Mm-hmm.
The secretions are so incredible that you literally start to drown out. And your lung function goes to zero. So it's like emphysema, but it's not. Because what's happening is the alpha, beta, and gamma, okay, radioactive emissions, the X-ray emissions from the uranium emissions, the dust that deposits in your lung literally forms what's called granulomas, the scar tissue in the lungs. Okay? So it's like emphysema. The lungs no longer function. The alveoli sacs don't function. And so your perfusion goes down, so your external perfusion goes down, so your oxygen perfusion drops way down because of the cellular damage, the removal of the CO2, you know.
So if they were unable to get rid of the CO2, then they
correct.
Would suffocate.
You don't get
suffocate.
Adequate oxygen, you're unable to get rid of the CO2, and then your nutritional perfusion has gone to heck in a handbasket. So what you end up then now is the whole cells and the whole body end up with what's diagnosed as fibromyalgia. And then you got the rash. The rash has never gone away. I mean, you know, the rash started within 24 hours of exposure. It's never gone away, and it's painful today.
So it's a painful rash too.
Oh yeah, it's a pain. It opens and opens. It's like looks like you've been shot with a shotgun.
And so now is this heavy metals coming out or?
Well, yeah, you have heavy metal toxicity, but you know, as far as what's being excreted today, we don't know. Again, because so much has gone in sequestering. It's not mobile, so it doesn't come out with the urine. I've been in discussion with a lot of medical authorities recently for some chelation therapy using different new techniques that could extract it. But I've gotten real hesitant on that because it just we got to be under total medical control when we're doing this stuff because you get very, very sick. And so you got all those problems. So we're seeing all that. The other thing we're seeing, all the neurological effects, peripheral neuropathy and everything else. The other thing, too, which we have, and this is one thing with my nursing staff, one of my nurses that's totally contaminated from treating casualties on the front line, and her and I wrote the report and did the report for the United States House of Representatives by request of Chris Shays and Bernie Sanders years ago. Our teeth just break off and fall out because the uranium replaces the calcium. So you got decalcification not only of the teeth, but you got decalcification of the bone. She got osteopenia and osteoporosis, which are nasty. So Fosamax, you know, take Fosamax and hope you make it. Then we have the eye problems.
What are the eye problems?
Well, the eye problems, what we have, it is not only we have, circulatory problems to the eye, but then cataracts. And so they, in my case, they rebuilt my left eye.
Mm-hmm.
The right eye still needs to be done, but, you know, it was such a catastrophe doing the left eye that they're leaving the right eye alone. And then we have the hearing problems.
And the hearing problems are caused from?
Yeah, the neurological damage and the explosions.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, you get in the traumatic brain injury, you got three components for that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You got the explosions and everything else,
okay,
which is incredible concussion. Then you have the neurophysiological effects from all the toxins that affects the brain function, central nervous system, peripheral nervous system. And all that goes to heck in a handbasket. And then you have the component where you're just scared, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You're really scared. And then the big component, which is coming into play also, and I've had a lot of discussions on this, is the what we call the left half of the right half of the brain. In other words, people, the military individuals over there, all of a sudden realized it was all they were all lied to.
Mm-hmm.
Iraq never posed any threat to us. Afghanistan never posed any threat. All these battle plans that we put together under directive of the Clinton, under Clinton's directive, Hillary was involved, and then implemented. You know, Cheney got Bush to implement them. You know, is we're all lies.
Okay. Oh,
and so you have an incredible neurophysiology effect on a body and psychological effect on a body.
Where do the vaccinations come in here?
The immunizations, there's so many immunizations we're given that were just plain garbage. For example, the anthrax vaccine. The anthrax vaccine we know was contaminated, was inadequate, didn't function as told. When we started the anthrax vaccinations, and I was totally involved in this during Desert Storm at the Theater of Medcom level, part of Bowers Raiders. We were the theater experts on nuclear, biological, chemical warfare, hazardous materials, environmental medicine, everything. An incredible group of scientists and physicians and nurses and engineers. All of us go back to the Vietnam days. The team was put together very specifically by a directive from the Pentagon. But what we saw is when people were given the anthrax vaccinations during Desert Storm, because we have to understand, Iraq absolutely did have anthrax, weaponized anthrax during Desert Storm, okay? You understand that?
Okay.
And they had that because the United States Army from USAMRIID, Fort Detrick, Maryland, deliberately and willfully gave Iraq all the weaponized anthrax.
That's my understanding.
That's not just an understanding. It's thoroughly documented in the recommission report to the United States Senate that Jimmy Toot wrote. And that was the subject of a movie we did called Thanks for a Grateful Nation, starring Ted Danson and Mark Eldenberger.
Okay, what about your Beyond Treason movie?
Well, the Beyond Treason movie goes even beyond farther than that. That looks at the whole thing, and it looks at the thorough documentation, everything that's happened, all the testing, all of the weapons use, and everything going back to, you know, to the atomic bomb testing and the Manhattan Project, all through Agent Orange and everything else to the present. And that not only has all the experts that we have on the video, you can obtain the full set. It also has all the documentation showing you all the actual reports and the actual directives to do all this stuff on a separate CD. Most people don't want to look for this info. They don't understand it when they look at it. And when they do, they don't want to acknowledge it because then they have to take action.
Right.
How do you acknowledge and admit that the leaders of our nation, leaders of our military, deliberately and willfully have contaminated air, water, and soil, food, and water for eternity, deliberately ignored the adverse health and environmental effects, and deliberately and willfully have continued to deny, delay, or if they do provide medical care to anybody, ineffective medical care, not only to our U.S. military personnel, but all the affected civilians? How do you explain that to the people? And most people don't want to deal with it. And then daily and daily, like today, I mean, you know, here's another one every day. Well, another affected individual, 23 years old, respiratory problems, cardiac, heart transplant, at 23. That's unheard of. These guys were being deployed to the military were extraordinarily healthy before they got over there and got exposed to everything.
What do they think is causing the ALS that I'm hearing?
Well, the ALS that you're, Lou Gehrig's or neurological problems, MS, ALS, all this stuff, is a combination of uranium and a combination of pesticides.
So they're using pesticides too?
Oh, yeah, they have been. You see, in Desert Storm, you know, they were used extensively. We were involved in that also. What happened is prior to deployment, we knew that we needed pesticides for all the bugs in the desert and the houses and everything, just like you do here. And what happens, instead of shipping the approved EPA-approved pesticides, we had to buy them on the open market over there. And then they were totally misused. And so that continues to this day. But what we have seen with Operation Iraqi Freedom, Enduring Freedom, the units and the commanders were actually issuing flea collars for the soldiers to wear on their arms and their legs and around their neck. Well, a dog can wear a flea collar, a cat can wear a flea collar, because they don't sweat. There's no direct absorption of pesticides into the body through the skin. Yeah, but, you know, a soldier, a kid does. And so we're seeing, that's why we got, you know, 80-some thousand neurological casualties just in the DNVI report from November, you know, a little over a month ago. And that doesn't include all the hundreds of thousands of others. So it's just a complete, total disregard for the health and the environment, a complete, total disregard for the medical care requirements. And then if medical care is provided, it's ineffective.
You know, I just watched a video on Google about a guy named Edwin Crosby also getting in about the VA and their denial of making it highly difficult for people to even get the attention they need when they do get out.
Yeah, that's a deliberate act. What is supposed to happen is prior to deployment, you're supposed to get a full physical exam, okay, to give your health status exactly for deployment. If you have any problems, you're not supposed to be deployed. PBS did a special on it Sunday here. I don't know if it was, you know, across the nation, but it was definitely here, you know, from the University of Illinois PBS station, NPR. on these guys being deployed with all the medical problems, okay, and especially the PTSD, which is a combination, as we already said, of neurophysiology and psychology. And so when they get deployed, when they come back, there's very specific forms, and we worked on, got this to do it, but Kilpatrick, who's in charge of this, Dr. Michael Kilpatrick, Deputy Secretary of Defense for Deployment Medicine, they're supposed to ensure everybody gets a post-deployment physical assessment, and that's not happening. And if it does happen, the physicals disappear. So in my case, or in our case, what we absolutely know happened is our records and our medical records detailing the work we did, plus the medical records, you know, total going over the medical problems we had right away, have disappeared from the National Record Center at St. Louis, Missouri. They're gone. They just disappeared.
I've heard several different times this has happened, actually.
Well, it happens all the time. And when we were talking to the U.S. Army Inspector General for the Human Resource Command of St. Louis, we were told from the Pentagon our records were put into a separate vault so they could have no access to them, and we couldn't get to them, and nobody even know we did the work. And it was real funny because the Inspector General actually confirmed that at Human Resource Command, but they refused to help us. And so that's what they did to the team in charge. Now, the average kid didn't keep copies of his medical records, doesn't understand what got him. He's sick all over. It's coming back. It's transmitted onto the family. Okay.
You want to explain that a little bit?
What we have is, especially with the clothing coming back, the gross contamination, not only from uranium, but everything else on the clothing, gets back into the house and then transferred to the family, into the family environment, or they wash their clothes in the washing machine. That should never be done. The other stuff we know, gross contamination comes back on all the equipment and then transferred in the environment or in the community where it's there. And then tents and everything else all come back contaminated.
Do they put any of that into the surplus?
Yes, they do.
Oh, my goodness.
Sure. I mean, one of the things that we had, especially with the uranium destroyed equipment and vehicles from hit with uranium munitions from Desert Storm, is that equipment that's thoroughly contaminated was melted down and recycled. And then the uranium-contaminated metal that was recycled ended up in cooking pots and definitely ended up in car bumpers. And so we had the aftermarket, instead of the OEM, the aftermarket thing coming back, you know, with these new manufactured bumpers, which are radioactive, and much less cooking pots. I mean, a Navy ship that had a report, and they were doing the stuff, and somebody decided to, you know, whatever, doing, swinging a Geiger counter over a cooking pot as they were cooking the food for the Navy personnel, and they found, oh, Jesus, it's hotter now.
I've even heard they use that as ballast in planes.
Oh, absolutely. It's extensively used in ballast. It's actually used in golf clubs, and then you can buy what's DU-crete, which is concrete mixed with uranium DU as a fiber, in other words, to enhance the strength of it. Yeah, and then, you know, and then golf clubs and everything else, car bumpers, we've got to confirm. They use it for ballast and forklift trucks and everything else, and definitely in all the aircraft. One of the things we had working when I worked for the FAA, we started looking at the health and environmental effects and all that stuff, so we'd have crashes. And our air crash investigators go to an air crash, and the uranium's burned up in an airplane crash, and they come down with DU poisoning. Totally. I mean, we've seen this for years.
Oh, so they've been doing this a long time.
Blank eye. Pardon me?
They've been doing this a long time then.
Correct.
Oh,
absolutely
my.
Correct. I mean, what we have is technology gone crazy. We forgot to look at what are the adverse health and environmental effects of the technology, the chemical compounds, that's inorganic, organic compounds, the biological materials, and all the radiological materials that we include in daily life and industry and agriculture, and now we're paying the price. And we're going to pay a horrible price for it until people wake up and say enough is enough.
Are you familiar with the Alex Jones movie, The Endgame?
Well, I'm not. I've heard of the thing. I've not seen it, but I do know Alex very well. So I've been on his show a lot.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I've heard you on there. And, I mean, because it doesn't make any sense unless, you know, what he puts into that DVD makes a little more sense of why they have such, you know, lack of concern about the people that are involved in the environment and everything else.
You know, one of the things we're working on right now is turning to look at another disaster is in Hawaii. Okay? We absolutely know, and we got that letter total confirmation, the military has confirmed that they're having hearings right now and investigations, The U.S. used radioactive nuclear weapons, Davy Crockett's, out of Schofield Barracks and at the other training areas on the main island. You know, so we got both on Oahu and Hawaii. And so the thorough contamination. And we've been trying to get them to clean it up. Well, the adverse health effects all around have been a catastrophe for years. Military personnel that were involved in it are all sick or dead. I mean, we've been working with them trying to get them medical care, and the military simply refuses to do it. And what's most interesting is the individual that was responsible for messing up Walter Reed, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and everybody remember, you know, a year ago,
mm-hmm.
they found all, you know, the mice and the rats, contamination, everything, just an environmental disaster. Well, that same individual that was responsible there goes around the country, wherever uranium munitions are, and say there's no health hazards, there's no problems or anything. I mean, it's astonishing when he goes, and then we have military personnel call our doctors, my doctor, and say, he's not sick, he didn't get exposed, there wasn't nothing there, you don't have to worry about him. Direct and deliberate interference with medical care. It's a lie. I mean, this is a, you know, we have to understand, the military is about killing and destroying, and they will use the most effective weapon they have. And they will thoroughly disregard the adverse health and environmental effects. They will totally disregard their own mandatory requirements to clean up the environment and provide medical care. And they continue to do so and lie to the American public. And it's all about control of resources, control of terrain, and control of people. It has nothing to do with freedom.
Well, then you hear about what they, didn't they just pass some kind of legislation just recently that's going to deprive the vets of their ability for the Second Amendment? Is that, am I saying that correctly? On their ability to possess arms after they leave?
I don't know.
You're not familiar with that?
There's just, I mean, there's so many things that are happening. I mean, it's scary. I mean, you know, we just went through Christmas, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And for me, Christmas is difficult because I got family members deployed right now, okay? Relatives deployed and friends deployed right now. And I spent 3 Christmases in combat. And what I actually did today is I went back and watched Bob Hope Christmas special from 1970 that, well, I was there, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Not in the video, but I was present at the when it was done. And so I saw that and then continued on. So I had, you know, twice during Vietnam, because I had 2 years in Nam before I even shaved, as, you know, that's 40 years ago now, jeez. And then Desert Storm again, which was so interesting because Johnny Bench had come over there when we were during Vietnam, and then I actually talked to him then, okay?
Because
I was on command staff during Desert Storm. I actually talked to him again, and he remembered it.
Wow.
That was crazy. You know, not me personally, but remembered the conversation and where we were at.
So, you know, what would be your message to the people that, you know, the troops that are getting deployed or that are in there now?
Don't go.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, this is we're going to combat based on total lies. There is no battle to win. There is no battle to lose. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the incredible amount of money that we're spending per day, the environmental contamination and the casualties are staggering. I mean, what happens to the kid? They go over there and get wounded, they get injured, they get ill. They come back, they can't get medical care. For example, here in Champaign County, we had an individual, an Army sergeant, Illinois Army National Guard, 2nd of the Battalion, 130th Infantry, and I'd happened to have been a combat medic in that unit, the same unit, in 1983. And he came back missing an arm. They denied him service connection for shrapnel wounds and a missing arm.
Mm-hmm.
And we had an uproar here, and we finally got that corrected. And what they had stated is, well, wasn't service connected. And we're going, what did he do? Get in North Prospect at the Burger King when he was going through to get a hamburger? It's incredible. It's absolutely, totally incredible. You know, if there is a viable threat, then you have to act to defend your nation. We haven't had a viable threat against our nation for, I don't know, hundreds of years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I mean, the last viable threat against our nation was, the only nation that's had a viable threat against our nation is the British. You understand that?
Mm-hmm.
American Revolution, the War of 1812. Other than that, no. And all this stuff, we have to look at what's really happening. And, you know, we have to understand what are the casualties and can you get medical care and what happens to your rest of your life. I mean, when you go to war, you're physiologically changed forever. You're either ill, you're injured, or you're wounded. Psychologically changed forever, and I don't care how strong you are, who you are, you're psychologically changed. And then all those that die for nothing. For nothing.
It's just amazing. As far as the... Lorraine, you're still working with Lorraine Murray.
Yeah, we're in contact. That was real interesting how Lorraine Murray got involved. I was invited to a talk at the University of California at Davis. Okay, this is Livermore Labs.
Mm-hmm.
And Livermore, as you know, is a main nuke lab. Los Alamos, Livermore are the big ones.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was invited to do a talk out there, and I went out there. And the head of Livermore went bonkers on me as I did my report. And he came out and said, well, you're not who you said you are. You didn't do this work. You know, you weren't there. You're not sick. And none of this stuff is a hazard. And I go, well, here's all the documents. Here's the real things. And then Lorraine Murray and Marion Falk all stood up and said, well, this is what we know from Livermore. And that's how they got involved. So they totally explained the particulate size, the particulate physics, physics of particles, and how this stuff was so small that it went through all known respiratory and skin protection. It went, acted even as a solid. It acted as a gas, and it's distributed throughout the body and called all the physiological effects. This has been known since the Manhattan Project. So we got the documents, and we saw the stuff, and we verified it, and then it filled in all the blanks. So that's how Lorraine Murray and Dr. Marion Falk, one of the last living gods of the Manhattan Project, got involved. And then that brought in a whole group of people from the Manhattan Project who had worked with it and on, you know, on down through the years.
Well, she ties a lot of the increase in diabetes to this.
Yeah, and I don't know. I don't know if that's there. I mean, we know what's happened. The diabetes is really, you know, we've got total confirmation the VA's acknowledged associated with pesticides and Agent Orange, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I have to look at the other data again. I'm not a physician. I'm not a medical doctor. I'm a scientist.
Okay.
I'm a school teacher. I'm a garbage man. You know, when what we had to do with our work, we're the guys that went out and found the junk and cleaned up the mess and provided the first aid.
Okay.
For example, Tommy Frank, 7th Corps, okay, he was commander. You know, at the end of, during Desert Storm and the end of the Gulf War, one of his brigade commanders had a bad day with DU. And so what happened is Tommy Franks put myself and two other team members on his own personal helicopter. We flew up into Iraq to do the decontamination, provide medical care for the brigade commander. So, you know, I'm cleaning up, doing decon, doing basic surgery as a trained combat medic. I was a combat medic in the infantry many, many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we just did it up in the back of a vehicle in Iraq, and then we sent him on his merry way. Nobody else is going to touch him. Jeez, no.
Well, then,
who's going to touch these guys?
Well, then how about all the planes and the helicopters and all that? I mean,
yeah, all this stuff leads into gross contamination. But what with the gross contamination from using the uranium munitions against all known targets, and what we've got in Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom, I literally got the video, on-site video from the stuff with the U.S. military refusing to clean it up, water treatment facilities, hospitals, sewage sanitation plants, apartment buildings, schools, just shot all the heck. I mean, they just use it against all targets. When the military says it's effective against armor, it is, but it's more effective against a conventional target because it causes fires.
Mm-hmm.
You have to understand, when uranium munitions are used, there's different uranium munitions, okay? We have what's called kinetic energy penetrators. You shoot gigantic darts of solid uranium. The Abrams tank fires a single round. Every single round is over 10 pounds of solid uranium. The A-10, that's a Warthog aircraft, the Air Force plane, fires a single round. Every single round is 3/4 of a pound of solid uranium at 4,000 rounds a minute. That's a ton and a half of uranium on target per minute. 1.5 tons, 3,000 pounds of uranium on target per minute. Then the Bradley fighting vehicle fires a chain gun, okay? That's a 25 millimeter, and that's an incredible amount. Every one of those are 0.5 pound.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the 20 millimeter from the Navy Phalanx, which is shot up all over, you know, the coastal waters here. The Coast Guard has it on their ships, and I mean, you know, we've got total Puget Sound's contaminated, all these areas. I mean, I wouldn't eat anything out of Chesapeake Bay.
Well, you know, there was something that went all over the internet where they had some kind of munitions depot there in Iraq that just blew up, and these guys were just filming.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, that happened multiple times. That
wow.
happened during Desert Storm. Okay, and right after Desert Storm in what, June, July, 1991, and that three of my guys died at that when that blew up, and they were trying to clean up the mess. And that caused a grass contamination. And then in this current war, it also happened, too. A massive depot blew up with all uranium munitions. Incredible catastrophe.
Yeah, it looked like you could almost see some mushroom clouds in there.
Well, you absolutely can. You have to understand, when the uranium munitions are used, okay, let me finish the different types we have, okay?
Okay.
Then we'll get on to that.
All right.
The other type we have, so we got all those, and then we got for the 50 cal machine gun, the Barrett sniper rifle. Barrett brags about how good the U-round is on his website. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And that's actually taken a 50 cal round fired by the Marines actually took out an Abrams tank. I got involved in that investigation. 50 cal round from a machine gun destroyed an Abrams tank.
Wow.
And then you've got the 7.62 machine gun. Okay, that's what we call the M60. Okay, and then in addition to those, you have the cluster bombs. These are the ADAM and the PDAM. Those are the acronyms: ADAM and PDAM. And they're basically landmines. Now, these are the submunitions of cluster bombs. They were extraordinarily used. The Israelis used them against Lebanon, okay?
Uh-huh.
And that's part of the uproar on that. The U.S. gave the uranium munitions to Israel, and they used them. And then also they used them extraordinarily effectively in the Balkans, in the marketplace there, and other things. And, you know, the United Nations ordered the cleanup, but the Department of Defense and Kilpatrick refused to do it, and literally... That really burned my craw, you know, because I was involved in trying to set that up, and the UN sent the message to them, asked them to clean it up, and I actually had a copy of it, and they just refused to do it to this day. And so we got those, and then we have all the bunker buster bombs and everything else, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then we have, for example, the GBU-28, 5,000-pound bomb that the U.S. gave to Israel against Lebanon last year is all to you, okay?
Uh-huh.
It's uranium weapon. Extraordinarily effective. And then we got the cruise missiles and everything, obviously. You know, and that's where we got the signature of the Pentagon from the impact. So you got all these things. And so now when uranium weapon is used, it's extraordinarily thing. What it does is uranium continues to burn and burn and burn. It's the conventional explosive. You have the detonation, you have the fire, and fires out and consumed immediately. With uranium, the uranium continues to burn and burn and burn and burn and burn and burn. So it's what you see is the same signature, you know, when you go to the fireworks on the 4th of July,
mm-hmm.
and they got the magnesium and the fireflies keep burning and burning and burning and burning.
Right.
Well, it's the same thing with DU. That's the same signature. So we could tell right away wherever uranium munitions were used just watching TV during this current conflict and the ongoing operations. It shows up, you see it on TV every day. The distinctive signature is beyond comprehension. And then, obviously, you know, we've had, you know, groups gone in, you know, done the on-site measurements, confirmation of the contamination. You can get the radiological signature and the visible signature.
And they don't leave the equipment behind that gets contaminated by it?
They bring it back. We just had a whole group of equipment that was brought back out to Washington State and then taken back up to Fort Greeley, and they tried to stop that. And we talked to the longshoremen and said, you know, you can't handle this stuff unless the military has confirmed that they've decontaminated, cleaned it all up, because you're going to get it. And then it'll track all the way through the environment, you know, wherever you ship it, which is what the problem we had during Desert Storm when I sent back the 25 vehicles that were destroyed with friendly fire during Desert Storm. They were shipped to the Port of Charleston and then put on a railhead and then taken to Barnwell in South Carolina, and contamination all the way along.
And can you really clean them up?
Was even spread to the other installations after they left there.
Can they really clean them up?
No, they can't.
Well, that's what I was wondering.
No, they can't. And see, that's what we learned. You can't. So, say, for example, if I have one destroyed building or one destroyed tank out in Iraq or wherever it is, okay, What you have to do is you have to pick up that entire destroyed piece of equipment, which is extraordinarily dangerous because it's full of fuel and unexploded irons, biologicals and other chems and everything else, much less uranium. Then you have to put that in a big hole if you can safely, where nobody can ever get to it for the rest of eternity. Then what you have to do is pick up all the unexploded ordnance and all the other contamination in and around that area. It goes way, way out, you know, several hundred meters radius. In other words, you know, hundreds of feet, okay?
So they really couldn't even decontaminate Rocky Flats or anything?
No, they can't. And that, Rocky Flats is a whole other ballgame. We got involved in this a few years ago, Denise Nichols and I. We got a phone call. And they were freaking out because the garbage men had gone to a regular garbage dump out in Denver, and they were throwing garbage into the dump, and they saw these things there, and what they unearthed were the sarin bombs.
Wow.
Explosives filled with sarin nerve liquid agent. And they called us and said, now what do we do, guys? Well, you know, we got it all forced through. Again, our whole team did the work and forced the Army to clean it up. The Pentagon was madder than heck at us. But, yeah, the contamination from Rocky Flats, it got out of there and got in the conventional land dumps, you know, just in the garbage dump. And then people found the stuff there. Well, that continues to this day all over.
Well, from what I understand, they just threw a bunch of dirt over it and were going to start developments on it.
Correct. And that's what they're doing right here at Grand Tool at the closed Chanute Air Force Base. It's an environmental catastrophe here. And they're taking the contamination, digging the contamination out here at Chanute Air Force Base in Rantoul, and they're taking it to other communities and burying it in other communities. And I sit on the board, and I said, wait a minute, you can't do that. Boy, they didn't like that. They didn't like that at all.
Yeah, the part that just amazes me is the people that are at the top, do they get exposed to this stuff?
Absolutely. If they come out, I mean, that Dick Cheney's been sick. All of these guys have been sick. Anybody that General Schwarzkopf is sick. Chuck Horner, it's real interesting. General Chuck Horner was in charge of the Air Force stuff, and when we made the conscious decision in December of 1990 to blow up Iraq's chemical and biological stockpiles in place that the U.S. military had given them,
mm-hmm.
I want to repeat. In December of 1990, we made a conscious choice at the command headquarters in Riyadh to deliberately destroy Iraq's chemical and biological stockpiles that the United States military and the Army had given them. That's in Schwarzkopf's autobiography, It Doesn't Take a Hero, on page 390.
Uh-huh.
And so 10 years later, and this is 2001, we all got called up to Washington, all those from the command staff, and were involved in all this stuff, and we're all standing there. Denise Nichols and I are standing there with Chuck Horner, General Horner, and he's sick the same as I am, and Denise and everybody else. And he said, well, we sure didn't mess that up. And he said, we sure should have listened to you guys when you told us not to blow it up in place because it's going to get us later on. I said, yeah, that's right, sir. And it continues to this day.
You know,
the adverse health and environmental effects of war, the weapons we use, the munitions we use, the destruction we wrought on a nation's infrastructure, we do not have the capability to clean up the environmental contamination. We absolutely don't have the capability to provide medical care for anybody that's affected. And we just, and our leaders just totally disregard it. And it's wrong. I mean, I made a conscious choice to speak out, and it was wrong. Our whole team did. All of us that were in charge of this, and we became persona non grata. Boy, you talk about fast.
To me, it seems like a no-brainer. But you know, it's amazing how many people will, you know, be quiet about it.
Well, they will. And the serious problems are, especially with the military. What we have found is that the military speak up in trying to get this stuff to go public, they lose their medical care. I mean, I've been billed for my medical care for which I have a disability. I've had denied and delayed. Mm-hmm. I've just been in an argument with the VA here at Danville, Illinois. I got a message. I've been trying to get an appointment for months. And then they came and said, well, you get one the 10th? I said, no, I can't get there on the 10th. And then you can come back on January 29th. And I said, oh, wait a minute. I've been waiting months. So they finally given me one for Thursday.
But if you're having to fight for it, I don't know. You know, I really appreciate you, you know, making time to come on my, you know, my program here and you know, inform the public in this area. I mean, because we do have a lot of military, you know, in and around this area.
Where are you at?
I'm in about 100 miles west of Pueblo. So, which
Colorado.
Is... Mm-hmm.
Oh, my. You guys are definitely in the downwind pattern from Four Corners. I'm sorry.
Well, that's what Lorraine was telling us.
You're in Nevada.
Too.
You're all right there. You're in the downwind pattern from White Sands. You're in the downwind pattern from Fort Irwin. I'm sorry.
Now, where's Fort Irwin?
Over in the California-Nevada border.
Okay. Well, she was
right up just off of I-5.
Well, she was, Lorraine was also making some comment about, you know, the from Fort Carson, too, with them using it.
Oh, yeah, Fort Carson's a disaster. Talk to Denise Nichols.
Yeah, and then they're wanting to go out and open up this area on the Pinyon Canyon to utilize.
That's crazy.
Wow.
You know, you mean the striker brigades and all this stuff want to run around and contaminate and blow up everything and shoot everything. At some point, we got to say no.
Yeah, yeah.
At some
definitely.
Point, we have to look at the adverse health and environmental effects. What is not only immediate consequence, but a long-term consequences. We have to deal with the real casualties we have, where we're incurring casualties for nothing. I mean, I want to repeat this: we're incurring hundreds of thousands of casualties today for nothing.
I'm definitely aware of that.
And I'm a warrior too. You have to understand, mm-hmm. I'm a warrior. But, you know, the point is, at some point, you have to say no more. And you have to ask the question. And the other thing, too, which, I mean, has turned into a nightmare, the American Legion, okay,
mm-hmm.
you're familiar with that organization.
Mm-hmm.
I continuously ask them, along with others, to help us get to medical care, to help us get our, you know, disability and everything. I've asked them, hey, we'll provide a car. Can you even drive us to our medical appointments? Because some days we're so sick we can't drive.
Mm-hmm.
They simply won't help us.
My goodness.
You know, and then they're taking, here the local post is taking an incredible amount of money on their bingo and raffle every week. But, you know, when you ask them, hey, can you drive me over to Danville 30 miles to get an appointment? I can't take myself. No, we can't do it.
I do know they have some kind of vans that they take up to Denver from this area.
Well, yeah, if you mm-hmm. can get to where the van or the bus is, and if you can get your appointment when they're going. And
oh, yeah. I've
had guys here at Danville, Illinois VA Medical Center, where they've been left stranded.
I've had them. My brother was going to the VA, and they would make appointments, and he'd get there, and they'd find out that, oh, they decided it was the next day.
Yeah, congratulations.
And he had to get up at 5 in the morning, and the guy is sick with chemotherapy and that sort. So.
Well, I've got an hour drive each way.
Right. Well, again, I really appreciate you coming on, and I'd like to be able to ask you again sometime if there's some way we can arrange it. I know you've got a really busy schedule.
Yeah, and again, you know, just it's late at night, and I'm very tired. And,
right. So.
You know, just you have to understand
mm-hmm.
how to describe this. I'm finished my job.
Uh-huh.
You know, myself and the rest of our team. I mean, we've got an incredible group of U.S. Army, U.S. Air Force, U.S. Navy physicians and scientists and nurses and combat medics and engineers that could no longer go along the lines and had to speak out. We were the individuals who had the responsibility. We put the environmental cleanup procedures together. We wrote the medical protocols. We put the training together. And then it's all been ignored. It's all been deliberately ignored. And then when you speak up and try to get it done, you become persona non grata. Your records disappear. Your disability disappears. You get billed for your medical care. Your care is delayed or denied. Your retirement disappears. Or you don't get it. It's and then when you complain or yell and scream to the top of echelons, nothing happens. I mean, we have only one presidential candidate right now that's running for office that cares and does anything, and that's Dennis Kucinich. Hillary Clinton was just talking about this, was interviewed in Iowa, and said specifically asked, what are you going to do if she said, well, we don't know what caused it, we don't do it. She was so thoroughly involved in all the commissions and things we were involved in working with her staff directly that I did, that they know exactly what's happening. They've done everything they can to prevent the information from getting out. In fact, the guys that are responsible for it right now, Dr. Michael Kilpatrick and the Department of Defense, was appointed by Clinton. They didn't change.
Then you're not. So you're saying Dennis Kucinich, because I was hearing something a little bit about Ron Paul.
Yeah, Ron Paul is the other one, too. I have not met him or talked to him. I know Dennis very well, personally.
Uh-huh.
But Ron Paul is the other one that I'm getting a lot of really good vibes from, and other people that have worked with him saying the same thing. Now, he's a physician, too, that understands it.
So
those are the indications, but see, one thing that people don't understand with the elections, you can elect these guys, but unless you change all the people that are there permanently every day, it doesn't matter.
Right.
And they haven't been changed from administration to administration, and we've worked with them. And I get so tired of phone calls and calling these guys up and calling the Department of Defense, calling the Pentagon, saying, I've got another sick soldier, I've got another sick family member, can you provide him medical care? Well, Doug, have him call us, and I do, and then I get a phone call back and say, they told me to go, where to go.
I'd like to see him just boot them all out at some point.
Well, you know, we have to regain control. We have to go back to honesty and honor and integrity and doing what's right. You know, I had one of my favorite movies is from 1938, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, with Jimmy Stewart. Where's Mr. Smith when we need him?
They've got a lot of people to fight to get there, as you found out.
Yes. It's an uphill battle, but we have to continue. My main objective right now is just trying to ensure medical care is provided to all of these kids that need help.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to ensure that we get the information to them so that the doctors can make the proper diagnosis and come up with some effective treatment. I mean, we have great physicians, okay, working on this. Some of the great physicians in the United States, Dr. Bill Ray in Dallas, Texas, Dr. Al Johnson in Dallas, Texas. These are occupational medicine, environmental medicine experts. And we just had a big medical conference last June on all this. You know, not just on DU or anything, but the whole complex mixture of occupational environmental medicine, which is what this is. Because what we see, the stuff from the effects of war, Desert Storm, Iraq, Freedom, Enduring Freedom, are a snapshot of technology gone crazy on the environment. That's occupational environmental medicine. And that's what these guys are experts in. And, you know, they brought hundreds and hundreds of us together down there for this conference. And incredible learning and everything that was happening and test protocols and actually looking at diagnostic procedures and looking at blood and seeing what happens with people in ourselves. Just, it was staggering. But at some point, it's got to stop.
I know. We had a discussion in our paper about, you know, the DU and its effects, and I had to go to, you know, I got involved in that one because, you know, you were the one that I went to and with information that you had on some of the websites, because there was people out there saying that it was harmless.
Well, the Department of Defense guys go out and actually state it right now. They state it all over, and they're just lying through their teeth. You know, when you look at the actual documents, which we provide when I go out and give a talk or I work with scientists or physicians, and then they're all of a sudden going, oh, my, they lie. Yeah, they do lie. And the other thing, too, is you'll see most newspaper reporters and TV journalists or journalists, they'll believe the administration lies.
We even had a truck that was carrying uranium, you know, turn over and down the canyon, which is near a river.
Not good. There's a whole procedure that I was involved in writing that they have to follow for that.
And trying to follow behind those trucks, you wouldn't know there was uranium on them.
No, and that's wrong, too. Because the local police and fire have to know, and they have to have specialized equipment and training. And that's in very specifically in the U.S. Army Technical Bulletin 9-1300-278. And in the Army regulation that I wrote that General Shinseki signed off and made mandatory, Army Regulation 700-48. And so there's very specific procedures that have to be followed, and they're not followed.
Yeah,
and
fact,
when they're not followed, that's where you get all the sick people.
In fact,
you get the environment messed up. But even when they are followed, it's still a mess.
Well, there's a place in Canyon City where they're taking a lot of these tailings and this uranium and trying to put it in some sort of ponds.
Yeah, well, they do that, and then they've got open explosions, you know, out in Nevada, Fallon, Nevada, just open explosions. They're doing open explosions, you know, out at Livermore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in that whole area, Tracy and, you know, San Francisco. You know, and so they've done it all over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't do that. I mean, open explosions, open fires and burning at Schofield Barracks in Hawaii. They're doing detonations right there now, spreading all this stuff down. They did it at Vieques. They do it all over the place.
And even Lorraine was talking about, you know, I mean, where do you get the counter, Geiger counters and whatever?
Geiger counters aren't going to do you much good.
Okay.
I mean, you know, one thing we learned, we had very specialized Geiger counters that we had to design and build and use for the equipment. And to find the alpha particle with the uranium round, you have to be no more than a finger's thickness away.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and if you're in that close, you're in deep doo-doo with the explosives and everything else. And that's one of the reasons we got so sick and so many problems right away.
So how do you detect it?
Well, yeah, I mean, you've got to know where it's used, signature, knowing what the inventory was, where it's been done. You can see the signature on the destroyed equipment, on the destroyed buildings. It's visible. You can see it all there. You can get the radiological signature for the gamma and the gammas and the betas, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You can get the signature when you get the resuspension of the contamination and collect that.
Okay.
But if you're reading it on a meter, you're sucking it in your lungs. This is all dangerous. I mean, you know, I've had a lot of groups saying, Doctors Without Borders, Voices in the Wilderness, Christian Peacemakers, they want to go over and do on-site investigations. Even the military, I said, no, wait a minute, you got to go through all this specialized training. We got 40 hours of radiological safety. We got 40 hours of hazmat. We got 40 hours of DEU. I got 40 hours of explosives. I got several hundred hours of medical. You just don't go in and do this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We all got selected to do this originally because we had all this training. We were all specialized, and we were all and been around for a long time. You know, I'd gone through all the enlisted ranks before I became an officer, so I had 19 years in as an enlisted when I started all over as a second lieutenant. That's unheard of.
So being able to get the outrage going so that people will finally do something,
Most people are content to be a mushroom. Give me a six-pack of beer and let me watch a football game. I don't have to acknowledge what's happened. I don't have to read and find out the information. I don't have to take action, and therefore I don't have to suffer the consequences of my actions.
Well, but they are.
Yes, they are, and they will continue to do so.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have to look at this thing. I don't know when you went through school or anything. Back when I was starting in the 60s, when I started, going through high school and then starting college and everything and getting into that stuff.
Me too.
The great thing was Monsanto was better living through chemistry. Do you remember that slogan?
Mm-hmm. I do.
Well, man, it's really ripped up the world, hasn't it?
Yeah, now they got a hold of our food.
Yeah, and that's just, we can go there and have a long discussion on that, but that's another night. And actually, I defer you to some other experts.
Right.
On
I just
did the hazmat and the safety in the department.
Mm-hmm. Well, I sure again appreciate you coming on the program tonight and making time, even though I know it's very late for you.
Yeah, and, I'm worn out.
Okay, well, and thank you for all you've done.
I'm just one of a member of a team finishing a job, but we sure need help. But the whole thing is, we need accountability and we need responsibility and we need duty, honor, integrity. Back in 2000, it was really interesting because when, George Bush and what's his name, you understand, I don't like him, okay?
Uh-huh.
Because I know where the reality was, and they put all these battle plans together, and they all fell apart, and Gore didn't take care of the environmental contamination radiation in Tennessee, and he's a senator, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And didn't do it, he was vice president. But it was real interesting because as we were leading up, we'd work with the Clinton administration, got fed up with it, so we went to George Bush too, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then I was a keynote speaker for the Veterans Day breakfast in the United States Senate in November 10th and 11th of 2000, just 3 days after the election, 4 days after the election, which ended up being a contested election and, finally resolved in George Bush's favor. But as I finished my talk in the United States Senate, I left him with one thought. And I'd like to leave this with everything else because this is kind of me and what I'm asking for help.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about me. It's about the kids. I need help to get this all done. And unlike my namesake, General Douglas MacArthur, I am one old soldier who will not just fade away. I won't fade away until medical care is provided to everybody and the environment's cleaned up.
Well, this is one of the reasons why I'm doing this program. Because last year, if you'd have told me I was doing radio and I'd be doing interviews, live interviews, I wouldn't have believed you.
Well, years ago, I never would have believed where my life has taken me either. My academic career at the university was shut down. My military career was shut down. And then God opened another window.
Yeah. So, it's just going to be a lot of us getting mad and saying they're not going to take it anymore.
Well, it's not so much as getting mad as doing what's right.
Right.
Getting the information and holding people accountable and make sure they do what's right and what they're already required to do, which they thoroughly ignore and refuse to do. It's, you know, I'm not asking for the military, the Department of Defense, the Pentagon, the leaders in the military, the generals, the colonels, the private, the sergeants to do anything that they're not required to do.
Right.
I'm asking them to comply with the requirements now. I'm asking them to consider the adverse health and environmental effects and take care of the citizens of the world. Take care of God's children. Because if we don't take care of the children, the future is bleak.
Right, right. Because we're not, you know, it doesn't matter all that global warming or whatever else they want to, you know, pound into us if we're not.
Well, it's a whole complex mixture.
Right.
I mean, we got all the inorganic, organic compounds, biological, heavy metals, radiological materials that we've released in the environment. We got all the combustion byproducts, and you can't continue this way.
No, no.
You can't continue to build with materials that outgas and put contaminants all over. A good example, you know, they had Katrina, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then FEMA issued trailers to all the people that are already contaminated with contamination coming out from formaldehyde emissions in the trailers. They couldn't even live in them.
Huh.
What's wrong with this picture?
No, no. Well, there's just some things that just aren't right.
That's right, and we have to speak up, but we need a lot more people doing stuff. You have to look, you have to learn, you have to acknowledge, you have to do critical thinking, and then you have to speak up. You can't be a mushroom. You can't sit back and drink a six-pack of beer and go, it doesn't affect me.
Right.
Because it does.
It does.
And it will.
Well, again, Doug, I really appreciate you coming on and giving us all this information because it's you know, there's just a few of you out there that are really, you know, telling the truth, and it's really important that, you know, people hear it.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Doug. Have a good day.